Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I have another repeat guest, although he was on many, many episodes ago. And I think he does still hold the record for the person who is furthest away from me as I record on the other side of the globe. It's Ajay Tomich. Ajay, thank you for joining me.
Finally back. Was waiting for the call.
You know, I misplaced my Rolodex.
Here come the excuses. Yeah.
I was sleeping for a long time. but there are so many episodes of Star Trek that I knew I had to come back to you and pull you back in to Random Trek. I don't even remember what episode we talked about last time, but I will have a link to your last episode.
TNG episode. The Chase.
The Chase
was that. Yes, I looked it up. I did not remember too, but yeah, I just looked it up. So yeah,
that was episode 32. That was what is it? What, 5 years ago? Is that even right? No, 2 years ago. No, there you go.
Five years ago.
What? Similarly, though, and nobody who's listening really cares about this, but oddly enough, around the same time of the year, though, January 1st, 2015 is when that posted. So we probably recorded around late December.
That's probably true. I have no recollection of anything we said, so we'll probably just go over the same stuff now. But yeah,
I think we will. Yeah. Maybe in 2 years' time from now, in late December, we'll be talking about yet another random episode of Star Trek. It seems like a pattern at the moment. But before enough of this silliness, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am actually a tech writer and podcaster and a radio guy now. I work at the national radio over here in Slovenia, where I do a talk show. A tech show. Sorry, that sounded weird. People that listen to this, I can find me. I was only in The Incomparable Ones and The Focus twice, and I have my own show, which is called StormingMortal.com, which Scott was also on.
Yes.
I just resurrected it, basically. I think my last guest was Anthony Johnston of Atomic Blonde / Call the City fame. So, yeah.
And also a semi-regular Incomparable member.
True.
And so you're kind of a big deal in your country. That's what I say to people. And you're also just big. You're a tall man. People may not know
that's
this.
That's why I'm a big deal, because I'm 6'8". I think that's my only qualification.
And, you know, I like to think of myself as tall, but then when I meet someone who is actually tall, I feel very horrible about myself. I'm 6'4", which is, you know, tall-ish, but then I have a couple of friends who are both 6'8", and when I am in the same room with them together, I feel bad about myself because
And you should, because you're not tall.
Exactly.
I'm just going to say that, yeah.
I'm unaccustomed to be looking up at people. It's very, very disconcerting. But let's talk about Star Trek. Nobody cares about how tall you are, especially since you're taller than me. So I'm sure when last year we talked about your favorite series, but let's remind me of what your favorite series is.
It's still the original series. Mm-hmm. It's still the original. I actually do. It's in Slovene, so it kind of, you know, no point talking about it here. I'll just mention that I do a sort of Star Trek podcast in Slovene, where me and my co-host Jure Godler, who's an actual talk show host, like a late-night talk show host in Slovenia. That's absolutely true. And he's like a really big Star Trek fan like me. He actually got on a call with Paramount when he was like 6, 17 with a spec script for TNG, I think. He had like a two-minute phone call with somebody at Paramount. And that nothing came of it. But he's like, he's really into Star Trek as I am. And we do a show together. And we basically did all of the movies. Like we did... all of the movies, one episode was each movie, and then we did some best of the original series, and we're both the original series fans. So
did you limit yourself, when you say all of the movies, did you do the original series and the Next Generation movies, or did you
We just have Beyond to do. We're going to do Beyond the New Year's. Yeah.
All right, so yeah, you are an original series aficionado, so now I have to ask, what do you think of the J.J. Abrams kind of reimagining of the original series?
On the Slovene show, we talked about it a lot, and the conclusion, like now that we've had a couple of years for it to set in, right? We actually really like it. Like my co-host does not like Beyond. I actually think it's kind of okay. But the first two movies, I'm a fan of Into Darkness. Let's just say that I actually like Into Darkness maybe sometimes more than the first one. Which I don't know if that's okay, but that's
it's okay. It's fine. Yeah. I am of the opinion that people should like what they like. I happen to like Beyond, Into Darkness and Beyond, and the first one as well, which I know makes people angry. I like Beyond because it's got an evil Peter Weller, so that's always fun. Making an evil ship in the darkness. And he gets his comeuppance, so that's always nice.
Yeah. I'll go along with that.
And Beyond is fun. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense once you start thinking about it, but...
Oh, no sense. It makes no sense, yes. But the dialogues are great. Like, the when they all get paired off, like, mm-hmm. the dialogues, that's very Star Trek-y. Like, that's maybe more Star Trek-y than anything in the first one and the Into Darkness.
I think that's true. And I think the first, 10 minutes of Beyond where... Captain Kirk is dealing with those aliens and getting them upset, and then it shows kind of the monotony of the 5-year mission. I just really love that, the opening of it.
That was made for us. That was made for people that podcast about Star Trek. Like that whole, it's become episodic, and you're like, yay!
Woo!
Probably like every normal person that saw that is like, what is he talking about? Like, I did not. Yeah, that was made for us, I think, the first 5 minutes of that movie.
It's true. And I'm okay with some fan service. I'll take it.
When it started, like, I'm more than okay with it. So, yeah.
Now, we did not, when last year we talked about the TNG episode, and it is difficult since there is a small number relative to the other series, of the original series, to get one. And this time around, as people who are listening to this probably already know, you did not, yet again, you were denied an original series episode. A Voyager. Voyager seems to be very popular with random.org, so I have watched a lot of Voyager episodes as of late. This episode in particular is season 4, episode 24. It is called Demon, which I think if I were naming Star Trek episodes, I think I would have called this Silver Blood, but they went with Demon, so there you go. So, your thoughts on Voyager? Did you watch Voyager?
Yes, I saw all of Voyager. And we talked about it a little bit last time, and our, let's say, non-appreciation of Harry Kim. We're both sort of...
He's the worst.
And he's a sort of a big part of this episode, honestly. So, this was, I think it was fate for us together, you know. That basically half of the episode is just Harry Kim. More than half, like two-thirds is basically Harry Kim doing stuff. So, which is nice, because I think last time we just talked about how he scans walls and says stuff on the bridge, and that's pretty much all he does.
That's true. This episode, Harry Kim does some stuff. We'll get to it. He is not awful in this episode.
No.
This episode did not redeem the character of Harry Kim for me, but it came ever closer to making me dislike him slightly less.
Yeah. But I genuinely, when it was on and I watched Voyager, it was a great, it was like, what it was at that time, it was my favorite, like even more than TNG. Because just seeing it for the first time. Yeah, I saw like the TNG before, and then Voyager came out, and I was like, what the hell is this? There's no Enterprise, you know, I was just annoyed. But then it really grew on me. And it's one of those shows where I like the premise very much. Like, I like the fact that they're stranded and going back home, and there's none of the support of the Federation around them. Like, I thought that premise is that's sort of genius to me somehow. Like,
yes.
it sort of... that makes it okay even when the episode is crap, basically. Just because that premise is there, this long arc through the whole thing that I thoroughly enjoyed. So, yeah, that's why Voyager is kind of nice to me. But yeah.
Yeah, they always have this kind of central theme or quest of getting home, which powers everything. And this episode, a lot of Voyager episodes, my main gripe with Voyager, as people who have listened to the podcast know, is that I agree with you that I think the premise is fantastic, but many episodes of Voyager just kind of throw away the premise or just ignore the premise, and it's just like a random, like, TNG episode with different characters. And you're like, eh. This episode that we watched, Demon, is kind of all about that, you know, getting home, and they don't have all the resources. They're out of fuel, basically. And I really liked that aspect of this story, that they have to find some, deuterium, to, you know, the tanks are low. They got to shut off systems, and, nobody's happy. So.
Yeah. And there were a couple of those episodes. And I think one was where they just ran into an expanse of space with no stars, I think.
Oh, yes.
Like memory cells, you know, like there were a couple of those where they did sort of lean on that, you know, base premise of them being stranded. And yeah, that's, I think, what makes Voyager Voyager. And I do like the ship. Do you like the Voyager ship? The whole nacelles that kind of jump up and stuff.
Yes, like I do. And that it can land on a planet.
Yep. The legs don't look that weird to me. I had them in my head; they were weirder. But when I saw this episode, I was like, "That looks okay. That's not as bad." Yeah.
They don't look. I did remember vaguely that Voyager could land on a planet, and remembering thinking it was stupid. But watching this episode, I thought, "Oh, that's actually kind of cool." So it turned me around. I'm not sure if I think this episode is good, but I liked parts of it. So I guess we should. That's my spoiler already, that we should just jump into this episode and talk about what happens. And so we open up with, you know, the ship is running out of fuel, and everybody's got to turn some stuff off because they don't have any fuel. And so everybody, you know, they've shut down non-essential systems. They can only travel at a quarter impulse. Janeway has told Tuvok and Chakotay they need to come up with ways to turn off stuff, which, you know, doesn't seem like all that hard to do. And then, of course, we get kind of the B plot of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think I could have done without, which features Neelix looking for a place to sleep.
It's just, when I just watched this episode, I haven't watched any of Voyager in a while, and then just Neelix showed up without knowing what the B plot was going to be, and I was like, oh right, Neelix is in this. Like he was way over the top, like most of the time. Like that's my opinion. Just like. Yeah, he's like almost like Jar Jar, but not really Jar Jar. Like, if I can make that comparison.
he's Jar Jar light.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And I guess he the idea behind him is he's kind of a fish out of water, and he's, you know, he's their guide to the Delta Quadrant, but really he's just kind of annoying. He continues his annoyingness by, you know, Tuvok says, okay, everybody, we're shutting down, you know, power to the personal quarters. Take not only essential items and go to the shuttle bay or wherever they're making people sleep. And so Neelix – now, I will say I kind of am on the side of Neelix in this, because Neelix takes a couple of blankets and a book, which doesn't seem outrageous to me to take to the shuttle bay.
I didn't get that, yeah. Why is the book a problem? I don't –
Or you know, bringing your own blanket doesn't seem like a big deal, but Tuvok is having none of it. Maybe he just doesn't like being called Mr. Vulcan, which I think is kind of racist on Neelix's part.
I do like the fact that the book has a name, and it's sort of explained, like what the selected works of Jirax, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, which apparently are just some parables, and I just love the fact. This is why I like Star Trek. Because they'll do that. It's not, you know, it's not just, oh, it's my book of parables I read before. They give, you know, the Talaxian people a guide, that, you know, like Aesop's fables or whatever. Like, I do like that the book actually has a name. And that's the conversation.
Yep, and Tuvok doesn't care. He's like, I don't care if you read them every night. I don't care if your mother read them to you. You're not taking that to the shuttle bay with you. Also, you have to use regulation Starfleet blankets.
And I have one more thing with the book, right? I'd get Tuvok if that was, you know, a Star Trek Kindle, basically, because that consumes power, right? And even that's iffy, because, you know, you're a Kindle expert, basically. You know how long they last, right?
Yes. That could have been charged weeks ago. Yeah, it's not drawing any power.
It's not drawing any, that's weird, you know. If it was a Kindle, maybe I'm on Tuvok's side. But this, yeah, Neelix kind of comes out okay in that interaction. Yeah.
And even if they're putting people, I'm getting so upset I can't even talk, putting people in bunk beds, Neelix could just put the book under his pillow or something. It's not like he has to like throw it on another crew member or something. So
yeah, weird.
Tuvok does not, he gets a little ribbing in this episode, so I guess maybe that this is supposed to, you know, set him up for that. I don't know. But it was just a weird scene. And so basically, this is what sets Neelix off to find someplace other than wherever Tuvok has told him to sleep, which will come up later. because basically, Neelix says, oh, I am itchy and I can't sleep if I don't read this book. And Tuvok says, well, you should go talk to the doctor and he can give you something. And Neelix is like, oh, the doctor. And then, oh, where will that lead? Nowhere exciting is the answer. but meanwhile, you know, so everybody's trying to conserve power. And except for Seven of Nine, she's got all of her screens up and sensors going and astrometrics. Because she's Seven of Nine, and Tuvok comes in, Chakotay comes in, and he's like, WTF, Seven, Captain Janeway told you to turn everything off, and she says, well, I'm not going to do that because I'm looking for deuterium, and Tuvok is like, well, we've been looking for it for so long, what are the chances that just as I come in to tell you to turn everything off, you will find something, and exactly, yeah. And then she finds something, but she finds it on a planetoid that is a demon class.
Yeah, it's a Y class, right? I think that's the official designation.
Yes, the official, but everybody in the slang term is a demon class planet. Ooh, it is inhospitable to humanoid life forms. And they mention, I guess Chakotay at some point later mentions that even orbiting a demon class planet can wreck your starship, which seems... because of thermionic discharges, whatever those are.
Yeah. That's a thing. Thermionic discharge. We all know what a thermionic discharge is.
Well, you know, we all remember the first time that we experienced the thermionic discharge. And we all died. And so that now we know there is a place that is full of deuterium, but it is difficult to get to. So off Voyager goes to get some, you know, at this kind of remote gas station to go pick up some fuel. But the question now is, how do they do it? Because which seems very reasonable to me. The first thing they try is just beam it up some of it, because why not?
Yeah. But the deuterium, the discharge comes into play. Yeah.
And it blows up the transporters. But Seven of Nine saves the little ensign who was working the transporter. So everybody's fine. But the transporters are offline, forcing them to figure out a different way to go about finding this. And so now we get into a little scene with, I guess, the senior officers kind of trying to figure out how to do this. And Janeway's like, how about a probe? And Tuvok says, no, that won't work. And Harry Kim is like, how about with the shield modifications that Tuvok did, I could take a shuttle down. And Tuvok basically says, well, do I have to remind you that the planet is kind of hot? And Harry Kim is like, no duh, Tuvok, you don't need to remind me. And so basically this is a turning point in Harry Kim, right? Because this is not a Harry Kim
moment.
That's
why I said it's sort of fate we got this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sort of, he basically explains that for the first 4 years he did nothing and kept quiet, which was our main criticism of him.
Yes.
And this is sort of the episode where he finally speaks up and takes some action.
Yeah, and there's a scene with him and Tom Paris where he basically says exactly what you just said. And I felt like he had just paused, turned, looked into the camera, and was talking directly to me.
yeah,
saying,
exactly.
You jerk. I know you don't like my character, but in this episode, we are going to address that and make Harry Kim do something. And I will say, I've seen a lot of Harry Kim-centric episodes, and I feel like Harry Kim did the best job in this episode that I have ever seen Harry Kim do. He was
yeah, I'll go along with that. Yep.
Very confident, so much so that I thought, because I hadn't seen this episode, I thought that he had been replaced somehow with an alien before he had been replaced with an alien. Spoiler alert for later in the episode. But no, he's just a new man, and he's found a little confidence, which good for Harry Kim. That's what I say.
Yeah. And I do like the – I forgot how, you know, Paris and Kim are actual friends, and there's a lot of interplay like throughout mm-hmm. Voyager between those two. And
yes.
I sort of enjoyed that. I forgot about, you know – it was actually like it was good dialogue for like 1998 or whatever this aired. I think that's actually good dialogue, don't you? I mean, you know.
They were joking around about the bicycle and all that stuff. And Harry, Paris made a joke about, you know, installing bicycles in
yeah, and that's sort of a recurring gag mm-hmm. throughout the episode then, which, you know, I enjoyed
that. And he volunteered Harry Kim for the first thing. And so when Harry Kim is like, oh, I'll go down to the planet, and Janeway says, well, even if I take you up on this, I'm not sending you by yourself, and that's a nice moment where Harry Kim is like, oh, I'll volunteer Tom Paris to come with me, and Tom is like, I don't really want to go, but I will, and so they do, and that's they have that nice scene where Tom and Harry are talking about how Harry has found some confidence, and down they go to the planet.
This is one of my sort of, what's it called, a pet peeve with Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
The flying of the shuttle, how is that just done on the, you know, Elkar's keyboard, basically? Like, that annoys me, even in Discovery now. How have they not just put a joystick there? I know it's like, it looks futuristic-y when you're just tapping on a glass surface. Like, I get that. Mm-hmm. But it's a shuttle, man. Like, it's supposed to be, like, agile and move around and stuff. And they're like, Paris is like, oh, I'm gonna blip, 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 blip. I'm gonna do blip, 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 and that's all that. It's just so. That's the most. Like, I don't understand why that's the case. Like, even Sulu had, like, at least on the Enterprise, he had that, you know, sort of a throttle thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, something was happening, and there were, like, physical buttons, but it's always so boring to me when they fly, like, evasive maneuvers in the shuttle, it's like, blip, 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 blip. Like, I get that on the ship, right? Like, the ship is a big thing,
mm-hmm.
it kind of has to, like, that makes sense to me. But the maneuverability of the shuttle, like, surely you need some sort of joystick or something. Like, surely that should have been the primary interface there. But sorry, Toran, but that's always in my mind when I see shuttle scenes.
I agree with you. That does remind me, in one of the TNG movies, right? Isn't they have to do evasive maneuvers, and there's this very dramatic reveal of a joystick that can be used on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And it looked ridiculous. But I think you're right. For driving the Enterprise, you want a console. But for a shuttlecraft, I think a little steering wheel or a joystick makes a lot more sense. But
exactly. Yeah.
That's not what we have. But luckily, we've got Tom Paris, who's a great shuttle pilot, as we all know, although it has nothing really to do with this episode, because he just lands on the planet and everything's fine. And they get out, they start scanning, and what do they find but kind of silver pools of liquid that have deuterium in them. And this is when Harry Kim and Tom Paris do the thing that you should never do when you're two
go
people.
Go check out the pool over there.
Yes,
I'll take
here.
A sample, yeah.
And it was so obvious, because the way they framed the shot, so Harry Kim is hunched over the silver pool, and Tom Paris is walking away, and Tom, under no circumstances does he look behind him for whatever reason. He just is focused straight ahead. It doesn't make any sense. And you know,
it's very soap opera-ish, you know, when they just like sort of look just left of the camera and just talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he makes a joke about, I don't even remember what he makes a joke about, but then he's like, because they've been joking around all the entire episode, and he says, hey, Harry, that was a pretty funny joke. Why aren't you laughing? And then he's like, Harry? Harry? And then finally he turns around and, oh, Harry Kim is gone. Where has he gone? Now, I appreciate the fact that it was not really a big mystery to Tom Paris, because Tom Paris, despite all sides to the contrary, is not an idiot. So really the only place Harry Kim could have gone is in that giant pool that he was at the edge of. And that's the first thing that Tom Paris does, is just like stick his arm in the pool to pull out Harry Kim. So I appreciate that. I did think it was weird that he pulls Harry Kim out and there's no liquid at all on Harry Kim.
That was my thought exactly, because it's so obviously sort of sticky, the stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like so obviously sticky, and the bubbles when they come out, like he should have been drenched in it, but no, he pulls them out clean as a whistle. That's just, yeah.
His, which I guess, perhaps, as we find out later, the stuff kind of absorbs into things. So I guess, and that is, spoiler alert, that's not really Harry Kim that's been pulled out. Oh no.
I think it is
Harry Kim? I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, I think that's, because I think he still gets pulled out. And then when they run out of oxygen, right?
Ah, you're right.
And they
that
pass out because they find them in the same position. So that still is him, but the liquid sort of got to knew what, like his DNA. And then, I'm jumping ahead. Sorry.
Well, that's fine. No, I think we should. So basically, this liquid is alive, but it is not sentient, as we find out. And what it does, it can kind of sample DNA and then somehow replicate people. It doesn't really matter how. And now it has gained kind of sentience because it is an exact duplicate. So it has all the memories and stuff, which is kind of interesting. But at the end of the episode, it leaves some serious questions, which we'll get to. because the copies – so, yeah, Tom and Harry pass out and they're left on the planet. But unbeknownst to them, although we know, the Silver Blood – well, we know because we just watched it. The Silver Blood has made copies of both of them. But now, oh no, the ship is upset because they can't get to Harry Kim or Tom Paris. And so they need to send a rescue mission. Also, while that's happening, Neelix and the Doctor are fighting about if Neelix can sleep in the sick bay or not.
The worst B plot there. what will I do when I listen to my Puccini? And I'm like, sorry. Yeah.
Yes, just stop. And so, spoiler alerts for the B plot. They do eventually convince the Doctor to let them sleep in sickbay, and then he gleefully kicks them out when he needs to administer some medicine for.
But it's even worse than that. It's like it has a sort of a moral payoff at the end where Neelix says, thank you for your hospitality.
That's true.
And we're the doctor, sort of buddies, and the Doctor has that look. Oh, look, he still respects me, although I just threw him out. Humans.
The Doctor learns a valuable lesson about hospitality.
It's like an after-school special.
But that's all that really happens there. So we're not going to go back to that B-plot. But back in the A plot, Janeway is like, WTF, we need to go get Harry Kim and Tom Paris. So she sends off Chakotay because Chakotay is the person who solves all the problems in Voyager. And so he's off to try and save them. He gets kind of waylaid in the corridor by B'Elanna. B'Elanna wants to go with him because she is in love with Tom Paris. And Chakotay does the right thing, basically, and says, I need someone who's level-headed and kind of not emotional or has a big emotional attachment to someone in this rescue mission. And B'Elanna, of course, doesn't take that well because I like B'Elanna as a character, but there are many things can be said, good things can be said about B'Elanna, but she is not level-headed even in the best of situations.
Which is what you want in the head of engineering, just somebody with a temper.
Yes, someone who's really angry. but really smart and often able to solve the problems. She's
one of the best characters in Voyager, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah.
She doesn't have much to do in this episode, but she does kind of, I think she is insulted by what Chakotay says, but she knows that he is also right. And so she says, well, if you're not going to take me, take Seven of Nine. And she and Seven of Nine don't really get along, so Chakotay is surprised. But she basically says, well, if you want someone who's level-headed, I can't think of anyone who's more level-headed than Seven of Nine, which is true. So off they go. Chakotay, Seven of Nine, beam down. No, they take a shuttlecraft down there. But while they're down there, the transporters are fixed, so that makes everything a little easier. And they find – what do they find? Chakotay almost falls off a cliff. 709
and
is
Tom Paris saves him, basically.
Yes, and Tom Paris, the big kind of shock twisting thing is that Tom Paris, I guess the planet they're on is inhospitable, so they're wearing environmental suits, but Tom Paris saves him, but Tom Paris is not wearing an environmental suit. He's just breathing and walking around and talking about how great the planet is.
Yeah, but I like how that's sort of set up. Like, I like it's very Twilight Zone-ish, the twist in this episode. Like, I think the premise is kind of, we'll get to the end. I know what you mean. At the end, there's some questions.
Yes.
But, you know, sort of they can just breathe now. What's going on? And you kind of see they're a little off. They're kind of exhilarated and stuff, which, mm-hmm. you know. And I sort of like that because when I remembered when I watched the episode what the end was when I watched it, but like I think probably the first time I saw it, I was a kid back then, like that it probably blew my mind, like wow, he's breathing now, what's going on, you know, and all that stuff. So I do sort of like the general sort of plot of the episode, but yeah, okay, sorry, go on.
No, I agree with you. I think it's a very interesting twist, and so they spend a little time basically trying to figure out how the heck Tom could be breathing, and he takes him to Harry Kim, who is also just kind of breathing, and they're like, this doesn't make any sense, but we need to take you back to the ship to figure
and
out.
And I love the way Chakotay just is not having any of it. They're like, no, let's stay here and do that. Just take off the helmet. And like, mm-hmm. no, we're just going to go to the the doctor will see you. Like, yeah, this is not normal. Like, we're just, yeah. You know, and they're like, no, but we should stay. And like, yeah, let's just go to the ship. Like, well, I love that part.
We'll come back, but maybe we'll just go and see what's happening on the ship. And in another great moment, right, they beam onto the ship, and now Chakotay and Seven of Nine take their helmets off, and they're fine. But Harry Kim and Tom Paris are suffocating because they can't breathe the air on Voyager, and I like that. And so they send him off to sickbay, and the doctor quickly figures out that they're suffocating, and so he, you know, sets up a little force field and floods it with the gases from the planet, which they did tell us were corrosive, but then at this point, they're not. It doesn't really matter. And
yeah, how easy it is to just get the gases from the planet onto the
I don't know. It doesn't matter. For the I did like one of my favorite moments of this episode is ridiculous, but so the force field is up, and then the doctor is obviously he's a hologram, so he just kind of walks through the force field.
Yeah.
I like
yes,
it a lot.
I know exactly what. Yeah, it was so cool. So cool. Still so cool. Yeah, that was genuinely just the great. Yeah, he just walked through. And you kind of see the whole effect, mm-hmm. right? Oh, so cool. Just, yeah. That's why I'm a Trekkie, honestly.
Exactly. Like, for moments
stuff
like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the doctor's like, well, they are Harry Kim and Tom Paris. They have the memories of Harry Kim and Tom Paris. They just no longer can breathe our atmosphere. And they've been changed by this planet, which is kind of weird, but I can't explain it. and they're like, well, okay. But now they still need, I mean, the central premise is we need this fuel. So they need to go get some fuel. So they sent, Chakotay and, Harry
Seven
Kim.
Seven of Nine.
And Seven Harry, of Nine. Yeah. They say, go.
And I love the rationale where Harry Kim gets to go along. It's like, I know the terrain. And I'm like,
all right.
You just, because you don't know at that point, right, that he's like a clone of the, you know,
mm-hmm.
but he's like, I know the terrain. I'm like, you were there for like 17 minutes. Like, that is not a tactical advantage in this situation.
He knows it slightly better than everybody else. And this is when, you know, we find out Harry Kim has a connection to the planet. But more importantly, Tricorders pick up faint life signs and they find Harry Kim and Tom Paris unconscious in their environmental suits. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
And that's a big twist. But meanwhile, Torres and Janeway are poking at some of the silver liquid, and it kind of hops up. They find out there's protein in it, and then some of it hops up onto B'Elanna, and nobody seems too freaked out by it, and then it hops off and back onto the petri dish and turns into her thumb, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, but you do have to remember, I just checked, this was 1998. That was a pretty cool effect.
Oh, yeah. I think the effect was super cool. I just questioned everybody. Janeway and B'Elanna seemed kind of super chill about the fact that it happens.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, just dealing with some sort of liquid that's from a corrosive planet and it jumps onto your thumb. You're like, ooh, it's on my thumb. Like no security procedures. So,
you would think. Yeah. I would, but they're Starfleet officers, so I guess this is probably maybe not even that high on the odd things that have happened to them. So, and this is, you know, that now the pieces are coming together, right? So, Janeway figures out that this silver liquid can basically replicate DNA, we figure out that, and that's where Janeway's like, we got to get off this planet. This is not good. But while they were, you know, looking at stuff through future microscopes, Silver Blood, which I think they start calling it that, starts to pool underneath Voyager and kind of pull the ship in because it doesn't want the ship to go because it wants to replicate more intelligence for itself. And Janeway is not a huge fan of that. And so she basically tells them to shoot some kind of, you know, anti-Silver Blood beam from the, deflectors to kill it. And
it hurts all of them, right? Even the two copies on the ship, right? Mm-hmm. Which I thought was kind of clever. That they're so connected. I thought that was kind of clever.
I thought it was clever as well. And then this is when Harry Kim basically explains, you know, it's hard for me to explain. We've never been sentient before, so this is all new to us, but we really kind of like it. And we would like more, please. And Captain Janeway says, so you want to take my crew and make duplicates? And the duplicate Harry Kim is like, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And this is the point.
This is when it gets weird.
Yes. This is the point where I question Janeway. I know Janeway wants to save her crew, and she does. But I guess she basically gathers all of the crew together. Everybody gives them a DNA sample, and I guess they like shoot them out of the ship or something. And the last scene of the last thing that we see is Voyager, which is actually a very cool shot. Voyager,
very cool,
lifting off the planet, and basically the crew, a duplicate of the full crew, just kind of wandering the plane and watching Voyager leave. So my question. It seems like those duplicates are exact duplicates, and it seems kind of morally wrong to do that, force people to give DNA. So did Janeway tell them that they were going to be giving DNA to an alien to make duplicates?
I'm sure she did, but like the weird thing is, this is was that Christopher Nolan movie, The Prestige?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen The Prestige?
I have not.
Oh, you should definitely watch The Prestige. There's us. Okay, we're not going to go into it, but Scott, trust me, watch The Prestige. Anyway, I'm going to try and work around that because I don't want to spoil it. Yeah, just watch The Prestige. Anyway, I do find the whole thing, like, it's a cool shot, like you said, mm-hmm. like the ship leaving and the crew's there, but it is kind of weird. I also have a question with the food and the drink. Like, I imagine the silver blood is not just going to be enough.
Well,
or because they can breathe the air. Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe because they can breathe the air, they just don't need food and water anymore or whatever. But
yeah, I don't know.
And
you're right. I hadn't even thought about the food part of it because they are exact duplicates of humanoids because they're not just humans on the Voyager.
And they're all in, you know, Starfleet uniforms, which is also kind of weird. Because
then it makes a complete duplicate of it. So I guess it also makes a duplicate of what you're wearing. And the mechanics of supporting life on this planet seems difficult, but also I don't know if I would want to leave. Like if Captain Janeway,
the moral implication of just leaving, even if it's your copy with your memories on a planet, like a random demon planet.
Exactly.
That seems kind of cruel. Yeah.
That is an exact duplicate of me. And at that point, that means that there are two of me in the universe, and we are diverging. And wouldn't that just seems like a lot to absorb? And if someone commands you to give your DNA so that a duplicate of yourself can be made and abandoned on this planet, that seems like an immoral order, and that you should refuse it if you are uncomfortable with it.
But I think it's set up not as an order. She says, I'll ask them, you know.
All right.
So I imagine it's all voluntary, but still, even I'm just not talking about the individual person, right? Who does that? Like, you know, I don't know who actually, although I will say, because when the Harry and Paris copy, right, walk on the Voyager, they want to get back.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they want to be on the planet, and the planet's beautiful and stuff. So I think the writer sort of thought of that, and it kind of drops in throughout the whole episode, sort of hints where if they just get back to the planet, everything's going to be okay.
Everything's
you're just supposed to be okay with that.
I guess. And looking at the Memory Alpha page, it says that Janeway said any willing crew members could be duplicated. So I'm better about that.
Well, I'm glad you'll be able to sleep at night, Scott, because, you know, if not, that was all on you. You know, you just left a whole compliment. You know,
And this is, I don't think this is the best episode of Voyager, but I think that it contains some elements, the best elements of Voyager, which are that Captain Janeway, unlike any other captain that we've seen before in Star Trek, has to make these kind of moral decisions cut off from everybody, right? So the decision here is, and the writers didn't choose to do this because it says willingly, but is, you know, they could have made it so that the alien refuses to let them leave until there is a duplicate of every crew member. So she'd have to, the choice there is, do I kill this alien or do I force my crew members to be duplicated, right? And that's still kind of, I mean, it's slightly softened because of the willing part, but it's still a big kind of quandary that she
has
to deal with.
That's going to be the Tarantino version.
Like, that's right. There'll be a lot more swearing, a lot more blood. that's the end of this episode of Voyager. So what did you think of it?
It's somewhere in the middle there for me, for Voyager. Sort of, you know, it's one of those, it's a great premise, I think, for the plot. Like, I think this, I think it just kind of, it kind of falls apart because it's, you know, it's a random episode of Voyager, which is like a 42-minute show with a budget of whatever that was, right? Where it all went into the CG stuff. But I think, like, sort of just the base premise of the whole episode, I think it's kind of great, you know, with the demon planet and, you know, the inhospitability and then the silver blood and the cloning and, you know, even the moral dilemma there at the end. I think it has all of the sort of, you know, everything you want from a Star Trek episode, I think. It just kind of, it's sort of clumsy in a couple of ways because they needed to just hurry up along and for some reason include the whole B-plot, which is totally unnecessary, honestly. Like, just lose that and maybe, you know, flesh out the second half a little bit more and you'd have like one, like maybe even a classic one. Like, I'll go, you know, just because the premise, I think, is kind of strong. Really, really strong to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if they had jettisoned the B-plot and spent a little more time on the A-plot, it probably would have increased the episode's quality vastly. But I guess, you know, I'm not a Hollywood producer, but I imagine actors have contracts that require they be in certain portions of shows, like certain percentages, so they need to use all the actors, and they couldn't figure out a way to have Neelix in this episode without some kind of stupid B-plot, and so we've got a stupid B-plot.
The Neelix annex to the contract, yeah, that's what that's called.
That's
but
right.
I will say, because when I watched it, right, just like the CGI, it looks okay. Like,
yes.
I don't know why. I just thought it was going to look way crappier. And then I saw, like, even the intro, which I love. I think it's still one of the best intros, the Voyager intro.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The Jerry Goldsmith, like, tune is even, it's amazing. That's amazing. But when the Voyager goes through, you know, the mists and stuff, like, that's awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it still looks good. Like, I thought it would really look dated. Like, I thought it would look like, you know, when you see, you know, if you watch the unmastered versions of the original series, like the planets there is just somebody drew something with a crayon, right? It's just a ball and some melted crayons and planet, right? But this still looks okay. And I'm sort of pleased by that. Like, it's visually pleasing to me to know that it's old. I saw it first when I was a kid. I'm watching it again. And I'm just fine with the CGI, right? I that was really, really took me by surprise. And I was really pleased by that.
And I think they made I'm sure our friend Joe Steele would have many quibbles with it. But I think that they made a lot of choices that age well. And then the age becomes readily apparent when we've got, you know, episodes with what species 5, 6, 4, whatever the heck that species is, right? Because that was state of the art then, but it looks really bad now. This episode, you're right, looks really good considering that it's over 20 years old, I think. And I do agree with you that the Voyager intro is probably one of my favorite Star Trek intros of all time. So, and I like the Voyager.
Second, of course, to the Enterprise intro, which we can all agree.
Of course. The best theme song. Yeah, it is my ringtone. Yes. It's fantastic. Yeah. And on that shocking revelation, I think I will end the show. So thank you, Andrzej, for joining me. It was a pleasure.
Oh, thank you for having me anytime. Like, it's a random track, anytime. I just bought the t-shirt.
Oh, well, great.
I just want to say,
tell your friends. Well,
I got the red shirt this time. I have a blue one from the run before, and I got the red one this time. So.
Well, thank you for buying a t-shirt. And I'm sure in 2 years' time, sometime in December, we'll be talking about a random episode of Star Trek.
Scott, if that's not a original series episode, I'm gonna stop talking to you. Like, it's just gonna block you on Twitter, and I'm done. Like, I'm
that's
just saying that.
Yeah, that's fair.
No, I need to pray to the random gods to give me a good number. But you know.